What I was really unprepared for is that in setting out to write this Olympic book, what I really came away with was a parenting guide.
That's Karen Kraus, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Karen Kraus is an award-winning sports writer for the New York Times. She joins us to talk about her book, Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town's Secret to Happiness and Excellence. Karen, welcome to the program.
It's my pleasure to talk with you. I love telling people about this town that I discovered, so thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Well, let's start there. How did you discover the story of Norwich and all their Olympic athletes?
So I was at the Olympics in 2014 and received a reader email out of the blue from someone saying, I noticed you're covering the Olympics. You should talk to Hannah Carney. She's from this very small town in Vermont that has put a lot of people on Olympic teams. And I was assigned hockey in Russia, so I was not going to have the opportunity to talk to Hannah. But I did do some cursory research just to see what exactly was this pipeline and who was Hannah. And I was intrigued enough that when I got back home, I did start doing some research and took a trip to Norwich. And what I found, I grew up in California, so on the surface of it, it might look like I would have no affinity for a small Vermont town, but I actually felt an instant connection to this town because in Santa Clara, California in the 1970s, when I was growing up there, it was like Norwich, believe it or not. In many ways, it was still largely an agrarian culture. It was considered the fruit basket of the United States. I grew up amid orchards, plum and apricot orchards. There was a huge communitarian spirit or vibe. I mean, everyone looked out for everyone else's kids. But most of all, there was Santa Clara Swim Club less than a mile from my house. And at the time, it was probably at its peak in terms of its success in producing Olympic champions. When I went back and did the research in 1968, so a little before I happened upon the scene in this town, they had 15 Olympians on the U.S. swim team from Santa Clara, and their medal haul would have placed them third on the country medal table. So hugely successful. And so what I remember growing up in that environment is that you see Olympians all around you. They live down the street. They're on the pool deck when you are working out. I was coached by Olympic medalists. And when you're in that environment, it demystifies what is an extraordinary achievement. It doesn't normalize it, but almost so. So there are people who think, oh, I could never get to the Olympics. That's such an amazing feat. Well, if you grow up around a lot of successful athletes who have done that, it makes you think, of course it's possible, because look at these people right in front of me have already done it. So when I went to Norwich, I understood that piece immediately, that after the first Olympian, Betsy Snite, in 1956 and 1960, there was this lull. And then in 1984, two ski jumpers make the Olympic team. And it inspires the whole community. Now you have kids who had been alpine skiers, they were cross-country skiers, and all of a sudden they see these ski jumpers and think, wow, I want to do that. So it feeds their success, fed on the whole community got interested. Kids started going out for ski jumping or Nordic Combine, which incorporates ski jumping. And of course, you had the Dartmouth facilities and coaching, which is a huge part of it too, just the proximity to those resources. So the Olympic piece of it, I understood. What I was really unprepared for is that in setting out to write this Olympic book, what I really came away with was a parenting guide. And that, I think, at the end is what I hope readers take from this, is that the way that these parents have developed their children is the lesson to be taken from this book.
Well, we'll learn more about that in just a moment, but let's talk a little bit more about this accomplishment. Norwich is such a small community, so I have to think per capita, they produced an amazing amount of Olympians.
Right. 3,000 residents, and they have produced 11 Olympians, 10 since 1984. So it is fairly remarkable. And as the principal of the grade school pointed out to me, in the last decade, they've added Olympians even as their population has dropped off a little. So it's crazy. But again, I think part of it is this legacy feeds on itself. And I talked to parents who said, you know, I have young children and they might want to stay inside on some of the harsher days of winter, but when I can tell them, well, if you go to Dartmouth Skiway, you can get a lesson from an Olympian, then that gets them outside, because who is going to turn down a chance to learn from an Olympian or to just interact with an Olympian? These are, in some ways, these children's superheroes. So the Olympians are really wonderful, too. It's part of the charm of the town is there is this generosity of spirit and a communitarian vibe where people think nothing of giving back. It's almost built into their DNA. So you will have Mike and Jeff, well into their 50s now, still working with the high school ski jumping team. I went to a high school ski jumping meet where Jeff Hastings, who finished fourth in 1984 on the Big Hill, the best finish ever by a U.S.-born ski jumper, he was doing the public announcing and Mike Holland was grooming the hill. Can you imagine what this says to these kids who they can see people who they really look up to doing all of this for them? I mean, it's such a wonderful message that they are sending with their actions. All of the Olympians do clinics when they're in town to give the children exposure to their sports. I talked to Hannah Carney, the one double medalist. She took a check she received, took it to the library and asked the children's librarian, will you please use this money to buy some sports books that you think teenage girls might be interested in? So again, in ways great and small, these Olympians are very much a part of the fabric of the town. They don't act like they're better than anyone. They are fully integrated into the community, and I think that makes a lot of difference.
Karen, you profile a number of Olympians in this book and tell their stories. Tell us about who we'll learn about in this book.
So you will learn about Hannah Carney, who was, again, a two-time Olympic medalist. Maybe the most recognizable in terms of how she's wired of the athletes, the classic elite athlete, very hard on herself, perfectionist, got down on herself very easily when she didn't meet her lofty expectations. But the town was always there with this big safety net to catch her when she failed and pick her up and let her know that they were proud of her and to keep drumming into her a perspective that was so very different from her own perfectionist slant. You'll meet Andrew Weeding, who was a really fun chapter to write. He took up track as a senior in high school and less than 3 years later made his first of two Olympic teams. This was 2008 in Beijing in the 800 meters. He competed in 2012 in London in the 1500 meters. So any parent who thinks it's of the utmost importance to get your child settled in a sport by 5, 6, or 7 so that they can make the Olympics, the Andrew Weeding chapter exists as the repudiation of that. You'll learn about the ski jumpers, Mike Holland and Jeff Hastings, who were not only among the best in the sport that America has ever produced, but who continue to give back to the sport really selflessly. You'll learn about Felix McGrath, an alpine skier who was a four-sport varsity athlete in high school. and Julia Crass, a slopestyle skier who just missed making the U.S. team this year. She competed in 2014, and then against the wishes of her coaches, who thought it was of huge importance that she goes to South America and New Zealand and train in the fall for skiing, led her high school soccer team to the state championship.
Well, I want to come back to contemporary Norwich in just a moment, but let's talk about the Snight sisters. As you mentioned, they sort of put the city on the map back in the 50s, but their story is not representative of Norwich today. Tell us about the sisters.
So Betsy Snight was, as I said, she made the Olympic team at 15 and 1956 in alpine skiing, and then she won a silver medal in 1960 at 20. She had a kid sister, Sunny, who was 4 years younger, and these children, it is not a stretch to say they were raised to be champion skiers. It's a situation that would sound very similar to a lot of people today in this professionalized youth sports complex, as I call it. Their father, Al, had had some major health problems growing up, and as a result, he was not able to take part in athletics to the degree in which he would have hoped to. And so he channeled all of his yearnings into his daughter's careers and lived vicariously through their successes. He would yank them out of school in the winters so that they could travel to other parts of the United States for training and competitions. They did year-round training. He hired private coaches who were affiliated with Dartmouth College to work with them on off-ski conditioning programs. When their friends were, you know, swimming in the swimming hole in the summer, they were doing five-mile runs. So they were in the community, but very light footprints. You know, they didn't interact with a lot of the townspeople because they were very much separated or isolated by Al and this dream he had for them. With Betsy, it worked out seemingly well. I mean, she won a silver medal, right? But she shared a lot of Al's characteristics, including his competitiveness, and she liked the attention that winning brought her. She struggled mightily in her life after skiing, which I would say is no surprise given how she was raised, that she never really had ownership of this activity. So, of course, she's going to be lost when she has to figure out who she is. But the real sad story was her kid sister, Sunny, who never really did love skiing. Left to her own devices, she would have rather been on a horse than on skis. And her career was ended by a practice accident right before the 1960 team was finalized. And she was in the mix for one of the six berths. They had a 10-woman national team from which the six berths were chosen. And she was in that mix of 10, when she suffered this accident, never skied competitively again, and really has struggled in her adult life. And today we look at parents that are like Al and we think, well, okay, they have their eyes on the prize being a college scholarship or an Olympic medal or a pro career. Back in the 50s, I mean, there were medals, certainly, but it just, even a medal didn't bring the fame or attention that it does today. So you wonder what his end game was other than what he was getting out of it himself just through this vicarious success. But I really think their story is so important because I see this so much today where parents do look at only the end game and forget that, A, sports can really be this amazing vehicle to learn all kinds of intrinsic lessons, to develop lasting friendship. I've talked to so many people in Norwich who tell me, you know, we value relationships as much as championships. And I think there's a huge value to that, because the championships people forget, but the friendships endure. Life skills that you develop through sport that will carry you far in your life no matter what you do afterward. The self-discipline, the delayed gratification, the goal setting, the resilience, the dedication, the perseverance, all of these things that you pick up in sport just as a matter of course are extremely helpful in your life going forward. And then just developing a lifelong love of physical activity, which is really important for health reasons. So that's sort of how the Norwich parents see sports, for all these intrinsic benefits, and it's almost a happy accident that they've received these extrinsic rewards in the form of Olympic berths.
As you observed what was going on in Norwich now, which is a much more sort of holistic approach as opposed to this, the eyes on the prize sort of focus,
right?
Are these lessons that can be transferred to other places? Is this replicable?
I sure hope so. I mean, that's my fervent hope, is that this book at least starts that conversation. And I think that it is, where there's a will, there's a way. And it just takes parents, coaches, administrators to all get on the same page and shift their focus on sports, like from the carrots they're dangling in front of these kids too. Like, let's take a step back and look at the bigger picture. We're raising a generation of athletes who are conditioned, however subtly, to believe that second place is the first loser. Are you a loser if you compete in sports and never gain a college scholarship, never gain an Olympic berth, never turn pro? I would say not at all, for all the reasons that I talked about earlier, all the intrinsic benefits. And Dan, I'm not only talking the talk here, I'm walking the walk. I was a swimmer from the age of 9 to 21. Never made a U.S. national team, never made a U.S. Olympic team, never turned pro. So I look at the lessons being drilled into these kids today about how sports is a zero-sum game, and to get ahead, you've got to crush the person in front of you and whatnot. And I think, do these parents look at someone whose career arc followed mine and think, oh, that poor person, what a loser, that was a waste of time for her to do that sport throughout her childhood? That would make me so sorrowful, because I look back every day of my life with gratitude on everything I gained from my years in swimming. I wouldn't trade my experience for a gold medal, because I made so many friendships that I have to this day. All the life lessons I learned that have helped me so much in my work. And I just think that's the piece that's getting lost. And very interestingly, I'd like to add that Amy Chua, who is known as the, you know, the Tiger Mom, she wrote the book on it. She was one of the people who blurbed this book, which I found very heartening.
If you were to sum it all up in terms of a takeaway that you hope readers get from this book, what would it be?
First off, give your children ownership of their activities. Do not steer them into the activities that interest you for whatever reason. Let them find the activities that they are passionate about, and then let them stay in the driver's seat. You ride shotgun. Be supportive. Be there for them if they have questions or concerns, but let them take ownership of their activities. Let them be the architects of their childhoods, because when they are passionate about something, they will be much more focused, much more self-driven, much more passionate. They will have so much more fun doing it because it's their activity, not yours. That's the main thing. Secondly, drill home in them that it's not just about winning. Second place is not the first loser, that there are so many benefits to sports that don't show up in the end results. And that really, at the end of the day, 5-10 years after your career is over, are way more important than those championships and trophies. And then also untether from technology. Norwich, through the accident of geography, does not have great connectivity to the internet and cell phone powers. So as a result, they aren't on Facebook seeing what every other person's child is doing. They aren't following social media and seeing what's going on elsewhere, what children across the country are up to. They aren't on their tablets or phones when their children are competing. They're in the stands watching their children compete and conversing with one another. The parents are forming their own community even as their children form their community in their sporting event. So those are three things, easy takeaways, not hard to implement no matter where you are.
Karen, thank you very much for talking with me today.
It was an honor. You're welcome.
Karen Krause's book is Norwich, One Tiny Vermont Town Secret to Happiness and Excellence. More interviews on a wide variety of topics are available at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You'll find us on Facebook at KPR Conversations, that's all one word, and you can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.